You learn about it in elementary school. A Supreme Court decision is part of the law of the land, along with legislation, the interpretation of the law, the settled questions that the Supreme Court puts aside become the law of the land. So to get around a Supreme Court decision, what do? Well, you've got to pass more laws. Or you've got to have a constitutional amendment if it's a constitutional question. Or you can do what's happening in the legal landscape surrounding the Roe versus Wade decision, of course, the decision which legalized abortion in the United States. You can actually look at literally the legal landscape for abortion by going to the takeaway.org, where a dozen states are trying to pass anti-abortion regulations, stipulations, disincentives, various kinds of laws that will have the net effect of regulating abortion and some might say actually rendering it illegal. Here's some examples. Oklahoma's Governor Mary Fallon signed a bill yesterday that makes it a felony for doctors to perform abortions after a woman reaches 22 weeks of pregnancy. And another that prohibits health insurance plans in Oklahoma from offering coverage for elective abortions under the new federal health care law. In South Dakota, a new law will soon go into effect that will expand the pre-abortion waiting period from 22 to 72 hours and require counseling from a crisis pregnancy center, which many folks believe, or many critics believe, actually provides a disincentive to actually seeking an abortion. So joining us to talk about this is Linda Greenhouse, who's the Knight Distinguished Journalist in Residence and Joseph Goldstein Lecturer in Law at Yale University. Linda, good morning.
Good morning, John.
Now, all of these local laws, some are local, some are state, could conceivably be challenged in federal court cases. First of all, why might that not be happening, and is it even possible in some cases?
Well, and let me just say one thing at the beginning. There's one other option. When you listed the options of what do you do if you don't like a Supreme Court decision, is, of course, change the court.
Ah, there you go.
Get new justices on the court, and that's part of what we're dealing with in the landscape about abortion. But so why wouldn't the pro-choice side go into court? Well, the current state of the law and Roe has been weakened over subsequent cases is that a restriction on abortion or an obstacle to obtaining abortion is unconstitutional only if it presents a, quote, undue burden, unquote, on the exercise of the woman's right to abortion. So what's an undue burden? Well, the court has said, for instance, that lack of public funding is not an undue burden. So I think it would be difficult as a constitutional matter to challenge the withholding of insurance coverage, for instance. And the court has said that a 24-hour waiting period is not an undue burden. Now, the South Dakota law, three times that, a three-day waiting period, that's a new question. So whether the challengers will go into court, there's a case there. I mean, the burden in a state with, I think, only one abortion provider in a pretty big state, for someone to have to drive across the state and park herself somewhere for 3 days and then go to this phony counseling that's required by the law, I'd be quite surprised if somebody didn't go to court to challenge that. In fact, I kind of think they have to.
In general, though, Linda Greenhouse, is there some sensitivity about challenging certain of these laws in the sense that there's a belief that the political environment out there is such that a ruling against on the law would actually be worse than just leaving the law the way it is?
Well, yes. I mean, there are two purposes that are being served by that the anti-abortion forces hope are being served by these hundreds. I mean, there was something, I read a figure yesterday, where the 900 such bills have been introduced into state legislatures since the first of 2011. So two purposes. One is to make it harder to get abortions, obviously, and the other is to provide potential vehicles for getting fundamental challenges to Roe up to a Supreme Court that people see as more receptive to such challenges. And so a disincentive to challenging the law might be, why play that game? You know, why get on that bus to the Supreme Court and provide that vehicle?
Linda Greenhouse, just from a purely legal standpoint, I've read legal scholars who said there are some laws which simply contradict the rulings of the Supreme Court. And I want to ask you about the strategy involved in that, in not just Roe v. Wade, but in other rulings as well. SCOTUS has said that states can't ban abortions before a fetus is viable outside the womb, and that the determination of viability should be left up to the individual doctors rather than the states. To that end, these laws that seem to contradict previous Supreme Court decisions, are they assuming that once they take it to the Supreme Court may overturn their earlier decision?
Well, you know, the Supreme Court did overturn an earlier abortion decision back in 2007 on the so-called partial birth abortion ban. The court had struck down such a law in 2000. And then Justice O'Connor retired and Justice Alito arrived in her place. And lo and behold, the next time the case came up, the law was upheld. So it's not a foolish strategy. I personally don't believe there are five votes on the court right now to gut the fundamental premise of Roe against Wade.
But and the local laws may have already...
One premise is this line at viability to be determined by medical science, not by legislatures.
But would you say that the law has already been gutted, as some have said, that basically Roe v. Wade is not the law of the land because of all of these disincentives? And does this doctrine of legislation by a thousand cuts have implications outside of abortion, maybe in immigration law, other controversial areas?
Well, I mean, Roe as modified by subsequent Supreme Court decisions is still the law of the land. But, you know, a law is only as vital as somebody has the right to exercise it. So if you're in a situation where there's one abortion provider in a state and all kinds of obstacles, and, you know, you didn't mention these laws that are now requiring ultrasound procedures to be conducted before even very early abortions, and, of course, 90% of all abortions take place within the first trimester. So the purpose of that is really, it just really adds expense. You know, on a procedure that many women already don't have any kind of coverage for. There's no public funding for abortions for poor women. So it's just one obstacle after another.
Right. Linda Greenhouse is the Knight Distinguished Journalist in Residence and Joseph Goldstein Lecturer in Law at Yale University. You can go to our website, thetakeaway.org, and see the legal landscape for Roe v. Wade and abortion regulations around the United States. A legislative death by a thousand cuts could have implications for laws outside of the abortion zone as well. Go to thetakeaway.org. And thank you, Linda.